Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. This is the latest on health and healing, always coming from the Library of Medicine's peer-reviewed literature, always from respected institutions. And then if there's something that I can add from my own clinical or research experience, I will. But this is meant to allow you to prevent illnesses and live a longer and healthier life. We began with a study from South Korea, from the Kung Hee University, and it talks about a healthy plant-based diet is associated with a lower colon cancer risk, especially in men. Why? Well, it's relatively simple, because the average American diet is overloaded with protein, overloaded with refined carbohydrate, white flour, white sugar products, and unfortunately is debased of any nutrients. As a result, food going through the intestine, the average American's diet, is like going from 70 miles an hour on a highway to 5 miles an hour on a highway. The longer those toxic foods are in contact with the sensitive mucous membranes of your intestine, the greater opportunity for inflammation. Now, we consider that all the sugars that we eat and all the refined carbohydrates that break down into simple sugars, then we're going to spike our blood sugar. Not good. Probably nearly 90 to 100 million Americans either have prediabetes or are diabetic, and most don't know it. And unfortunately, you can prevent diabetes. You can reverse diabetes naturally. I've helped countless people do that. But it takes discipline, and it takes understanding that fiber, lots of various fibers, fruit, fibers, nut fibers from walnuts and almonds and pistachios, and your starchy vegetable fibers, bean, legume, pulse fibers. These are all important in moving food through the intestine, also creating a healthy bacteria in the intestine that also helps in the digestive process and your immune process. So quite simply, in lay language, eating a plant-based diet, rich in healthy plant foods, such as whole grains, vegetables, legumes, and low in unhealthy plant foods, including refined grains and like white rice and fruit juices that are made up of sugar, and is associated with a lower risk of colorectal cancer. That's very important because colorectal cancer is the third most common cancer worldwide. And the risk of developing colorectal cancer over a lifetime is 1 in 23 for men and 1 in 25 for women. Now, let's go back to nearly the beginning of my career. There were three gentlemen over in Great Britain who were the country's leading health experts. So I flew over. I interviewed all of them. Dr. Burkitt, who discovered Burkitt's lymphoma, and he had this to say. He said when he was the chief physician visiting some 69 rural hospitals in Africa, he found it virtually impossible to find a case of appendicitis, colorectal cancer, diverticulitis, spastic colon. Strokes were so rare that when one happened, other doctors would congregate to see what was the underlying cause. Why? And he said it was because the people in their area of Africa had a very healthy plant-based diet, principally plant-based. The primary grain that they consumed was millet. Millet's not consumed in the United States very often. It's a tiny little grain, about the same size as quinoa, and it's kind of yellowish. It's very mild. In fact, you don't even have to cook it. If you just put millet into a bowl and then pour hot water into it, stir it around, and come back half hour later, it's germinated. And it's easy to eat. Tastes like almonds. And that's what they consume as a primary grain. But they also have gourds. They have a lot of starchy vegetables. Then I spoke with John Yutkin. Yutkin was the first person to hold a chair in a nutrition at a major Great Britain university. And he says that the problem is we have too many refined carbohydrates, too much sugar. And he was right. And he says, so you get people on a, let's say 30 to 40 grams a day of a fiber, they're going to live a longer life. They're going to have lower blood pressure, lower cholesterol, and they're going to have lower blood, overall, lower problems with inflammation all over the body. Then the last one I spoke to was the Dr. Cleave. He had been a medical doctor in the Royal Navy, and he said when people were eating boxed and canned foods at sea, completely different than when they got to shore, especially in the tropics, that's where his cruising was, and they were eating fresh produce. And he said everything changed. Their energy changed, their complexion changed, bleeding gums no longer occurred. He said that most people suffer from subclinical scurvy. Now, traditional scurvy is what sailors found when they were out to sea and they were eating salted pork and nothing good. And then one of the physicians found that when they took limes and or lime juice and gave that each day, that was rich in vitamin C. It prevented scurvy, which killed people. But what we have, according to Dr. Cleave, is we have subclinical scurvy. People have a poor diet. They're not supplementing with vitamin C. They're not having fresh orange juice. As a result, their immune system takes a hit. And we now know that a lot of people who have diseases are deficient in vitamin D3, zinc, selenium, and vitamin C, and magnesium. So just imagine how easy those nutrients are to put into your diet, along with a lot of plants. In fact, it was found when they examined 79,952 American men that had a good plant-based diet, they had a 22% lower risk of colorectal cancer compared to those with the lowest fresh vegetables and fruits. So the more fruits and vegetables you get into the diet, the better it is. That's an important study and simple, easy to do, not expensive. In fact, you save money on a plant-based diet. Now, this comes from Ben Gurion University of the Negev in Israel. And what it is they found that a green Mediterranean diet reduces twice as much visceral fat as traditional Mediterranean diets. And so following a lot of vegetables in the Mediterranean diet reduced the adipose tissue, a type of fat around the internal organs that is much more dangerous than the extra tire around your waist. Recently, researchers compared the green Mediterranean diet to the traditional Mediterranean diet and non-Mediterranean healthy diets in a large-scale clinical international trials. It was published in Direct Plus. And subsequent analysis found that the green Mediterranean diet reduced visceral fat by 14%. That's a lot. The Mediterranean diet, 7%, and the non-Mediterranean diets, 4.5%. And this was published in the British Medical Journal, Medicine. So reducing your internal visceral fat is one of the goals to losing weight. More importantly, however, it helps keep all the fat from infiltrating all your organs in the body. And the green part just means having, they were talking about having 20 grams a day of vegetables. That's way too little. The green participants had 3 to 4 cups of green leafy vegetables a day, and that's important. So the more vegetables in the diet, the more greens, microgreens, sprouts, the better. From the University of Illinois in Chicago, are older women being over-screened for cervical cancer? A new study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association's Internal Medicine suggests that women over the age of 65 may be undergoing unnecessary cervical cancer screenings and that more public health data is needed on the utilization of cervical cancer screening-associated services among older women to prevent potential harm and unnecessary cost. The study, which is authored by experts from the University of Illinois and University of Chicago and San Francisco and the CDC looked at Medicare claims from 1999 to 2019, and they found that 1.3 million women received cervical cancer screening-associated services, like a Pap test. Now, I support a Pap test. A Pap test is one of the most important tests you can get to help you with the early detection of cervical cancer. They also looked at other cervical procedures, and that's what they found. So please get a Pap test at least once a year, and that is a big preventative motion. Also, from Washington State University, chemotherapy could increase disease susceptibility in future generations. A common chemotherapy drug could carry a toxic inheritance for children and grandchildren of adolescent cancer survivors. The Washington State University-led researchers indicate this. The study published in the online iScience found that, in this study, it was rats. Male rats who received the drug during adolescence had offspring and grand offspring with increased incidence of disease. So it just passes it forward. Here is a question. Cancer has been here since the beginning of human existence. Why is it that we still have over 500,000 Americans doing everything they're told with the orthodox approach and still dying? I would think that after all these millions and millions of people obeying their oncologists, doing what they're told, taking the therapies, and we're still losing that much, isn't it time that we stop and look at the other therapies around the world, Ayurvedic medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, and then some of the Native American procedures? All around the world, there are people who have used other non-toxic therapies, not only survive cancer, but are in vital health. I believe that the pharmaceutical industry has had an undue influence on the curriculum in medical schools and on what doctors prescribe. Isn't it time that we started looking for what is in the best interest of the patient? Just a thought. And finally today, one last study, saffron. Now, I'm sure you've all had saffron, whether you recognize it or not. It frequently gives the orangish, reddish color to a lot of the curry dishes. But saffron is also one of the most powerful natural healing herbs there is. It's a spice. And saffron can fight liver cancer. This is from the United Arab Emirates researchers at the university, United Arab Emirate University. So it may be an expensive spice, but you cannot put a label on price on health. And so that's what they found, that adding saffron could end up fighting liver cancer, which is a tough cancer to fight under any circumstances because it has anti-cancer properties. What are these? It's called safranal, S-A-F-R-A-N-A-L, a major biochemical of the golden spice saffron, and it arrests and stops cancer cell division in two different stages. That's important. And this was published in the peer-reviewed journal Hepatology Journal. So if you can take something that's natural and non-toxic on a regular basis, then you're taking in something that has an anti-proliferative activity of the safranal against human liver cancer cells. Yeah, that's important. This was published also in Nature Journal Scientific Reports. And Japanese researchers say that ultrasound therapy can be used to treat patients with dementia. Tohoku University in Japan. So a new therapy based upon ultrasound waves might be able to improve the cognitive power of patients suffering from Alzheimer's disease and other forms of dementia. This was published, the article, on the Tohoku University news page, and I think it's important. Just one more thing that we can do to help people live longer and healthier lives. Now, that's the latest on health and healing. For those of you who like the information on health, well, you can go to prn.live. I do a radio show every day, live at noon. If you miss the live show, you can go to the archives, just prn.live, then go to the archives. And also go to garynahl.com. Look under articles. We have a newsletter. It's free. And it comes every morning on your computer. So if you're driving or you're busy, maybe you're at work and you're listening, but you can't write stuff down, you don't have to. It's all there for you every day, 5 days a week. And also on Tuesdays, I do my progressive commentary hour, hard-hitting, important topic, 7 p.m. So in any case, there's lots of resources for you. Thank you for watching. We're going to take a break and be back in a moment. Please stay with us. Okay, I'm cutting my health nutrition a little short because in the video streaming that we do to get this out to a lot of other sites, there was a little buzz. We'll fix that, but going live, we should be fine now. And I'm doing the health and nutrition segment, video streaming it, because a lot of sites just want health and nutrition. And we're loaded with hundreds and hundreds of those programs. You can get them for free going to prn.live and then garynahl.com. And all the other sites, we're building a whole new platform of sites out there. Now, in this segment of our program, I'm going to share, to begin, something that's only about 51 seconds long. Now, this was a couple years prior to COVID. So for those of you who wondered, did they take advantage of COVID to push their new World Economic Forum agenda? I think that that's self-evident because virtually everything coming out of the World Economic Forum about vaccine passports, a single digital currency is being implemented in Australia, now in the United States is proposed. So this is Anthony Fauci and four others, and they are very clear. Listen to this, their words, not out of context. They're stating that they were planning for a, quote, universal RNA flu vaccine, which then became the COVID-19 RNA vaccine. And because they said in their own words, people are not afraid enough of the flu virus. And did you notice that once COVID started, there were zero cases of flu death, not only in the United States, but Great Britain, other countries? How's that possible? Well, the fact is, it's not possible. You can't have between, let's say, 36 and 70,000 deaths a year in the United States from flu, decade after decade, and suddenly zero, because those were all counted as COVID. But this should give you something to think about. If you would like to call in and address it, please feel free to do so. I've got a lot of different topics today. I'm going to start with this short clip, but then I'm going to go to another very short clip with our Mark Stein and Eva Weidenberger Broke. She's an attorney, and I think you'll find this interesting because of what's happening in the Netherlands and how it's also happening in other countries. So let's go to that clip right now.
Why don't we blow the system up? I mean, obviously, we can't just turn off the spigot on the system we have and then say, hey, everyone in the world should get this new vaccine we haven't given to anyone yet. But there must be some way that we grow vaccines mostly in eggs the way we did in 1947.
In order to make the transition from getting out of the tried and true egg growing, which we know gives us results that can be, you know, beneficial. I mean, we've done well with that, to something that has to be much better. You have to prove that this works, and then you've got to go through all of the clinical trials, phase ones, phase twos, phase three, and then show that this particular product is going to be good over a period of years. That alone, if it works perfectly, is going to take a decade.
There might be a need or even an urgent call for an entity of excitement out there that's completely disruptive, that's not beholden to bureaucratic strings and processes.
So we really do have a problem of how the world perceives influenza, and it's going to be very difficult to change that unless you do it from within and say, I don't care what your perception is, we're going to address the problem in a disruptive way and in an iterative way, because you do need both.
But it is not too crazy to think that an outbreak of a novel avian virus could occur in China somewhere. We could get the RNA sequence from that, beam it to a number of regional centers, if not local, if not even in your home at some point, and print those vaccines on a patch and self-administer.
Well, they laid it out, their words, and this was all at a conference, the Milken Institute conference, and there were six people on the panel, and I have the whole transcript of all of them, and they're laying out, people are not interested enough in the flu vaccine, but there's never been a successful flu vaccine, never. I've written several articles on this. And there never will be, because they can only guess which strain of influenza will be impacting people and then try to have some form of vaccine for that. But also the science behind vaccinology is itself flawed. Let me give you an example. Let's just say that 100 million Americans take the flu vaccine and this year. And of those 100 million, 10 million end up with the flu. They'll come back and say that the vaccine was 90% protective. 90% protective? Well, what about the people of the other in that 90 million who live in Florida, Texas, Arizona, New Mexico, California, get out and get sunlight? Vitamin D helps the immune system. What about those who are on a healthy diet? What about those taking zinc and other nutrients that are known, literally known, to lessen the impact of a flu or cold upon a body if you have them? For if you're deficient, then you can get that. So you see, you can't say because they gave it to 100 million people that those who didn't get the flu, it was because of the vaccine. There is no scientific rationale for that. None. And yet that's exactly what they've been saying all this time. Their figures are absolutely fraudulent. But this gives you a deeper understanding, because this was planned before. I was just looking at the video this morning, and about around 15 years ago, a friend of mine who is affiliated with the Milken Institute, he lives out in California, very nice guy, and he gave me a call. He said, Gary, he said, a bunch of us with the Milken Institute want to do a world health projection, and especially in America, what's going to happen over the next, 5-10 years as far as Americans' health? And would you fly down to the Bahamas and spend a day with us? I said, who's us? I'm bringing in financial leaders from around the world, could be as many as 20, and we're doing this for a week on different aspects. So I thought it'd be interesting. I'd never attended anything like this, never met the people. So I flew down. And I met these people. They all seemed, on a casual basis, to be decent people. And one guy in particular, I really thought he was cool. He was from Japan, and it turns out these were people that financial advisors for the Vatican, for all the Russian oligarchs, the Chinese, the Japanese. I mean, these people help manage the money of people, and they want to know where's the future. And we did some meditation in the morning, did some Tai Chi, went out for a run. The other people weren't into the health, but I spent 8 hours with 1 hour break telling what I felt would happen in the United States, and it turned out that was correct. And they said, well, how can you say that we're going to get sicker instead of healthier? I said, because just take a look at it this way. Let's say that you have a crisis in this country. And let's say that crisis is everywhere. What percentage of the American population will be proactive to try to prevent that? And look at, and at that time, nothing's changed. I said, look, they did not prevent anything and when it came to Hurricane Katrina. And then later, Hurricane Sandy. People are not moving away from the beaches. They're moving towards the beaches. They're not moving away from water-short areas, drought areas, such as Phoenix and Arizona, New Mexico, and Colorado, Kansas, Georgia, northern Florida, 70% of Texas, 90% of California. They're moving to these places. You see houses falling off the cliffs over there in California, Steve. I said, well, how many people say, no, let's not build? How many developers say, let's not clear cut this forest that's been here? How many councils say, we don't want the tax money that comes from these people through sales tax and property tax and school tax, so we're not going to spoil nature? No. Everywhere, we're over-concentrating too many people in non-sustainable environments. And we should be doing just the opposite. Well, if you're not going to prevent a cataclysmic event, like if you're in Hurricane Valley or around the ocean, or if you're in an area where there are tornadoes or earthquakes, and you choose to stay there, what is the likelihood that you're going to choose everything else to be healthy in your life? You're going to go locally, you're going to plant garden, you're going to go to local farmer's market, you're going to exercise every day, you're going to deal with stress, you're going to take Tai Chi, maybe Pilates class, yoga class. What's the likelihood? Zero. Now take a look at how many Americans actually do something healthy each day with intent. Only 7%. So if you're going to do something in America, and this is, and I told him at the time, got a very good feedback on it, and years later, Steve said they didn't quite what to make of you, Gary, because you were doing everything extemporaneous with all these numbers coming out of your head. They couldn't figure that out. Well, okay, but at least they didn't make the mistake of assuming because someone has a good idea to have you live a longer life that you're going to say, sign me up. Just the opposite. Just the opposite. In fact, this happened on Saturday. It was interesting. I'll just share this with you, and then we're going to go to another clip here. There's a woman who grows sunflower sprouts. Now I'm going to start growing my own sprouts, but I've been so busy, I just haven't had time. I'm finishing up three books, brand new. We're going to press next week with the first one, and the other two over the next couple months, including a sequel to Living in the Moment, Prescription for the Soul, which was very popular. And then next year, over the next 12 months, 13 months, I'll be bringing back five of my most important guys, like Get Healthy Now and Complete Encyclopedia of Natural Healing and Women's Health Solutions, etc. I'm updating and revising those so they're new, and I'm doing it at the clinical level. So any doctor, nurse, dietitian, nutritionist, dentist who wants to give something to their patient that is natural, non-toxic, will then look at the back and see 3,000 to 5,000 scientific citations from the peer-reviewed literature from PubMed to support that this is not opinion, this is good science. In any case, so I just haven't had the time. So, but it's easy to do your own sprouting. In any case, I was talking with this person and who gave up nursing to start a sprout business. Why? Because of what was being seen in nursing was not progressive. It was just, you know, don't call out the problems you see. Doctor makes a mistake, leaves a sponge in someone, operates on the wrong. Don't talk about it. And, you know, you're talking about a lot of nurses, 5 million nurses. And when was the last time you saw a demonstration by the nurses going on strike because they need to tell the truth? You've seen individuals tell the truth and a great risk to whistleblow, but there's no group doing it. In fact, we don't have any group doing anything right now, nothing. You have individuals, which is good. So now this woman comes up and she's kind of over listening to our conversation. And she said, what's your new project? I said, I'm going to be filming all this week, which I am, and finish it this Friday, which I will, with 9 chapters of information on how to detoxify yourself from the vaccines, if you choose to. If you love the vaccine and want it in your body, good for you. No problem. There'll be no shaming from me or anyone that I know if you've chosen the vaccine. We will do all we can if you run into side effects or if you find out that you now have myocarditis or Bell's palsy, Guillain-Barré, we will try to help you if you want that help. If not, that's okay. But a lot of people, I believe, are going to be interested in this. And I have to do it as a webinar, not open to the public, because there's just so much information I'm getting in from so many specialists who are now focused on this very issue. How in the world, and is it even possible to get these, and the most dangerous of all is these self-assembling lipid particles from the vaccine, but also interface with your own cells growing in my arteries. How can I get that out? How can I stop? Because the inevitability is death. There's no good outcome to anyone who has this because they will keep growing until you die when your arteries are blocked. And we're seeing, are you paying attention? Is anyone paying attention to how many young people are dying and there's no mention of the vaccines? So anyhow, this afterwards, this is the interesting part. This woman, I say, my caretaker's on vacation. I don't have time to answer any questions. If you have a question, send it in to prn.live, and we have a phone number, and you can make a voicemail. She's all right, but she said, I'm really angry. I'm really, really angry. I said, about what? She said, because I won't go further than this. I'll just tell you, I'm a professional. I see patients. I have 2 advanced degrees. I'm 39. Most of my friends between 35 and 45. And many of them are professionals. And we all got our vaccines. Some got boosters on top of that. And I've got 2 vaccines. I'm going to get a booster next week. And we are hardcore Democrats. If Barack Obama actually said this, if Barack Obama were running tomorrow, or his wife, or Hillary Clinton, or Bill Clinton, we'd vote for him. We don't give a damn what they've done. That is irrelevant to us. I said, well, why are you telling me this? Well, it's your life. I don't care what you do. Do whatever you want. That's your mind, your body. Do it. You know. She said, well, why I'm angry is because I also listen to your show every single day since I was 17. And I listen, and I can't bring your name up because my group doesn't like you. They've never met you. They've never read your work, your articles. They never listen to your broadcast. But because you represent a different mindset, that they would have to reject you. And she said, I said to myself, now I'm having side effects. I'm having trouble breathing. Had to be rushed to the hospital. Got, you know, now I have asthma. I've never had asthma in my life, she says. But now I do. And my friends are all getting side effects. And not one of them's willing to acknowledge that this happened because of the vaccines. Yet they were all completely healthy. And she says, I just feel like a fraud because I'm living a dual life. I listen to you, but I don't do a damn thing you say. Never a thing. Haven't read your books. Don't support your radio station. Don't do anything. I just listen. And on the other hand, I do everything you say we shouldn't do that speeds up the aging process and causes disease. Yeah, we socially drink, whatever drugs, we do it all. And she said, but finally I realize I'm playing a dangerous game. And I said, why are you telling me this? What relevance? She said, because take a look. How many people do you see protesting anything that's wrong in the world today? I see a lot of people in Europe, in China, in the Netherlands, in France. I see all over the world. I see protest. She said, you see it in America? I said, no. No, there are no protests in America. And I said, and there's not going to be. So go ahead and enjoy your life, and you and everyone else will be rewarded. Remember, in this game of life, we all win. There are no losers. What do you mean? There are lots of losers. I said, ask a person that's sticking a needle in their arm. Ask a person that's just taken fentanyl but wants a double dose. Ask a person that can't stop drinking and has no liver, healthy liver cells left. Ask a person that can't stop buying crap when they can't afford it. Ask a person that's going to college without asking, will there be a job after me? Ask a person that votes for a person who doesn't know a damn thing about their background. Ask a liberal, are you a real liberal or are you one of these asshole Democrats who today pretend to be something you're not, like all virtually the entire establishment? Ask a Republican, do you get an erection every time someone says to war? Are you like the Marx Brothers in the movie Duck Soup? You just march around, Hannity over on Fox, you love war. It somehow gets you erotically excited to know you can spend another $1 trillion on weapons to see that someone gets their ass blown off someone in the world. But boy, you're a Christian. You go to church. God, what hypocrisy. And I just said, so whatever you're thinking out, just understand you're living a dual life. If you stop listening to my show, and she says, that's exactly what I'm going to do. I won't listen to you again. I said, fine. She said, because I can't live with the idea that I want to be healthy and I never make a good choice. I want to do the right thing, and yet I'm living a very hedonistic example. I heard you talk about the hedonic principle on a curve. I'm way at the head of that curve, as are all my friends and the millennials out there by the gazillions. I said, then you win. You all win. You just won't like your prize. That just happened Saturday. What a life. What kind of nonsense. We are really screwed. Now let's go over and take a listen to something I think is very important, because this is happening. And once again, you won't see anyone in the United States protest anything unless you turned off their telephone or maybe their gas or water or threw them out on the street. We don't protest. Home disclosures or home foreclosures. Obama could have, executive order, he could have stopped every one of 27 million Americans being on the street. What do you want to bet those 27 million Americans would vote for him tomorrow? That shows you how absolutely abysmal our capacity for critical thinking, spiritual thinking, and non-emoting is. This is what's going on right now in the Netherlands. Pay attention, because they're the second largest exporting of food out of Europe. Mark Stein.
Heer Eva, this sounds even too crazy for the crazies who govern us. But Dutch farmers are to be forced to sell their farms to the government and get out of the farming business.
Yes, you'd think it is too crazy to be true, but it's not too crazy, because our government consists of a bunch of inhumane, greedy liars and thieves. So it's very much what we are dealing with right now. And the protests that the Dutch farmers have been putting up since the summer have not changed their minds, because obviously, like I said, these people are thieves and liars, and they have their eyes on these farmers' land. So what they did is they came up with a new report in response to the protest, so to say, and instead of changing anything, they just changed the tone. So now they are pushing through, they are ramping it up, and actually the outcome of the new report is worse. So like you said, they are going to expropriate, forcefully buy out 600 farms in the next year. But it sounds a little nicer in the way that it's written in the little text. So that's it. I really can't say anything else about it. It is theft. They are taking away these people's property. They are taking away their lives. They are taking away businesses that have been in Dutch families for centuries sometimes. And people are becoming desperate. We had a farmer last week, 43-year-old man, who killed himself because he said he couldn't take it anymore. And he's not the only one. There are countless of examples like him.
That's heartbreaking. A 43-year-old farmer kills himself because of the government's determination basically to kill Dutch farming. When the state buys 600 farms, what's it going to do? And there's a similar program in the UK and various other countries. What is the Dutch government going to do with 600 farms?
Well, like they say, of course, that it's because of a nitrogen crisis, which is completely manufactured and made up. We don't have a nitrogen crisis. But what we do have in the Netherlands is a housing crisis, because our government lets in over 100,000 migrants a year, approximately. So obviously, our population is growing, and it's not because the Dutch native people are having a ton of babies. We all know that. So these people need to live somewhere. And there is no space left in the Netherlands. So what will they need to do? They will need to seize some of the land of these farmers in order to house new Dutch people, the newcomers of our country. So that is what this is really about. And of course, there's also the element of them, of our elites, not wanting us to have an independent or control over our food supply. And they obviously also don't want us to eat meat. So the farmers are standing in the way of their plans, and that's why they are being targeted right now. But we have to stop engaging in this narrative. Like I said, there is no nitrogen crisis. We have to stop even entertaining the thought.
As of this morning, that number changed. It's now 3,000 farms. Some have been in existence for hundreds of years, and they have some of the best farming techniques, soil conservation techniques in the world. And if you've never been to the Netherlands, it's a wonderful country, phenomenal people. And but this is not the Netherlands people that want this. This is the World Economic Forum. Look at where the people from these governments that are making these mandates are in alliance. They're in alliance with the World Economic Forum, and their multiple agendas, which they talk about openly. They're not hiding it any longer. They don't feel they have to. And because they can create eminent domain and take any farm for any reason they want. And the poor farmer gets almost nothing for the farm. And they've spent their life, generation after generation, farming. And they feed the world. Remember, it's the second largest exporter of food in Europe. So their food goes all over the world, including to hungry people in arid places in Africa and India. And now they want to stop that. Why? Well, their excuse is that it's about nitrogen. That's a feeble excuse, because the World Economic Agenda's leadership has been working with the leadership of different governments. For example, Trudeau. Trudeau does everything that he does the talking points verbatim, what the World Economic Forum or the Fourth Industrial Revolution wants. So now go back to one of the World Economic Forum's leading spokesperson, Professor Harari, who in my opinion is overrated as a true intellect. I've then taken the time to watch him, listen to him, read his work, and he's like on D'Angelo, that superficial intellectual level, in my opinion. But he's the one who said repeatedly, we're going to get under your skin with chipping it. We need to control people and can. And if you're a person of faith or if you're a person that is not significant, then you are, quote, worthless and useless. He said this repeatedly. Okay. To tell the world's majority of people that they're worthless and useless because they're not a part of the elite, then what do you intend to do to these people? And they intend to see that the, in effect, they're going to put people into a soma state. Aldous Huxley, soma, where you capture people by controlling their moods. You control their moods in case of Brave New World with medications. Well, think of how many people are on medications right now, because they were told they have a brain chemical imbalance, which has never been shown to exist, ever, and it doesn't. And yet it will cause the treatment, Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor, can cause a brain chemical imbalance, but it doesn't treat it. They don't even know how to create serotonin levels and what the correct balance is. It's all pseudoscience. In fact, tonight at 7 o'clock, I thought you would like to see what's coming at you in my newest documentary, which I'm finishing filming next week. There's just one person in Scotland who I've got to film, and then it's done, over. And I'm going to premiere this in February 5th in New York, along with two films. I'm going to do a double header, two brand new films, same time. In any case, I've got two people who were victims of the mental health field who survived. They're both articulate, and they have interesting stories to tell. That's tonight, A Survivor's Tale. And you'll be able to watch them because I filmed it, so it's video streamed at 7 o'clock on the Progressive Radio Network at prn.live, 7 p.m. You don't want to miss it. It's really interesting. But in any case, imagine now how many people believe that depression is due to or anxiety due to a brain chemical imbalance instead of what really is the cause, life situations, which should be dealt with in humanistic manner and practical manner. But we're destroying the family, and we're destroying the cohesiveness of society that once helped people get through all these crises that we all go through at different times for different reasons. None of this is easy. We all have responsibilities, and a drug can't take the replace, cannot replace what we need to grow from our experiences. They just dull us, put it in the soma. And then the whole idea of putting the meta shield on, you put that little visor on, and then what they have is that whatever you're anxious about, you can hit a program and the program will just play. And with artificial intelligence, they can change the program to be anything you want. So if you don't want to deal with real life, or there's no place for you in real life, and that's, they've already told us that. They've told us we're going to have a digital currency. Why do you think everybody's been using the vaccine passport for a health card and wanting that to also be part of a digital currency? Because they control your cash. It'll no longer belong to you. It'll belong to the bank. And therefore, the digital currency will also have a credit situation on it. If they don't like what you're spending money on, they can refuse to allow you to buy that. They will take your property. They will take your car. They'll take everything. Then you'll rent what you need. You want clothes? You can rent the clothes. You want to cook tonight? Well, in will come a service that will give you the pots and pans, but then that'll be returned tomorrow morning. Oh, and when you leave your house, someone else will immediately come in and take over that house until you return. Then they'll leave. That's what they're actually saying. This is not science fiction. It's not conspiracy. They've actually put it in their books and articles. Now, I'm going to present a major article really deconstructing everything about the World Economic Forum and the forces behind it and why it's virtually inevitable in our current state. Why is it inevitable? Because of what I said earlier. When was the last time you were in enough pain you decided to change? The simple reality is this. You need 15% of a population to shift in a direction to change the paradigm. We have maybe, at best, 5%, 7% when you include diet, but that's only one part of it. They want to grow the food. They don't want farms that do it efficiently. No, they want to have whole insect farms. They've laid it out. So all the jobs that you're working towards now, gone. Gone. Even the legal profession is just being decimated. Artificial intelligence. Why pay someone $300 or $400 an hour that's going to take them a week to look up case law on something when artificial intelligence can give you every case law in history in less than a second? That's what you're dealing with. Why have someone hire whole floor workers to assemble something when automation will assemble it? Why go to a doctor, be diagnosed when the new and they're doing this now. They've been doing this for a couple of years now, when they can use artificial intelligence to do better diagnosis than anything we have. All the students in college, good luck finding a job when you get out, because no one talked about, will there be a job based on what's happening? The person that's got their head in the air and looking ahead will see what's coming. You'll see the tsunami. Everybody else will be saying, look at the seashells. Let's walk out a mile now that the ocean's no longer at the shoreline and pick seashells. Now let's go to a person who nails this, Neil Oliver, one of the most honest spokespersons out there. And he's saying, quote, it's a toxic hell. Here he is.
If you'll come with me and just share some of it with me, that's leadership. What is being exposed and made blatant at the moment is that Sunak, Rishi Sunak, Keir Starmer, the rest of them have none of that. They have none of that character, not an ounce of it. They exist to exist. And they exist to get rich. They believe in nothing. And they care about no one. They care about themselves and a narrow cadre around them that they use to get what they want. But they don't care about any of us. They don't care if we sink to the bottom of the Southern Ocean while they sail away in the rescue ship. That much is blatant. I'm reminded all the time, actually, you know the footage you sometimes get from, a wildlife documentary will be on the seabed, you know, where they put those cable-controlled drones, these remote things, down miles down into the ocean. And they'll arrive at some, in the darkness, they'll illuminate it, and there'll be some godforsaken vent on the seabed 5 miles down, and there'll be things venting from it, God knows what, sulfuric acid, it could be anything. You know, the most toxic environment on the planet. And there's things living there. There's always something living there, existing in a toxic hell that has evolved to do nothing but survive and reproduce. That's them. Because in order to evolve to the point where they can survive and thrive in the world that they've created for themselves, they've set aside higher objectives like honour and decency and the long game and being prepared to make sacrifices to help other people. All they seek to do is persist. They're just like those blind, leather-skinned creatures on the seabed that can breathe in sulfuric acid. There's no God, no country, no belief in anything greater than their own advancement. And it's made so obvious when you compare them to the activities of someone like Ernest Shackleton. Shackleton was a leader. When they were still back on the pack ice, when he said, now we'll go home, he said to them, don't take anything at all with you unless it's actually going to help keep you alive. Nothing, no spare, nothing. And to make his point, he took off his gold pocket watch, which was his father's, and a cigarette case, and he walked them over to a hole in the ice and just dropped them into the sea. He said, they're not going to keep me alive, so I'm not going to bother carrying them. You can imagine that kind of demonstration of leadership. When they were close to Stromness, they had to climb down a cliff, and they had a rope, some tattered bit of rope with them, and they tied it to a rock at the top, and then they all climbed down. And as they walked away from it, Shackleton turned around and realised that was it. They had nothing. They were walking out of the Antarctic with the clothes they stood up in. They didn't have so much as a rucksack between them. They had nothing. But he said, that was all of tangible things, but in memories we were rich. That kind of thinking, where it's about more. We live in this pathetically consumerist society, you know, where the powers that be, just all they seem to want to do is to find cheaper and cheaper slaves to make crappier and crappier stuff that more and more of us will buy in an endless, wasteful cycle of meaninglessness. Hang on, Paul. There's a big hound wants out. You know, that idea, you know, that was all of tangible things, but in memories we were rich. It's the opposite end of the world that we're expected to have faith in. All we seem to be handed is the idea that a smaller and smaller elite can find cheaper and cheaper slaves to make more and more stuff that we, the consumers, will just buy more and more of and use for a few months and then dump in a landfill and then repeat the cycle ad nauseum. That's what we've been given. That's the reality into which we are being herded. And then you compare it to Shackleton. Shackleton was a force of nature. That idea that he was a natural man is a glimpse of why those of us opposed to what's happening now, this seismic change that's being forced upon us, we will win in the end. I am here today to tell you that we will win in the end. Shackleton had some luck on his side, and not everybody liked him. He was an awkward man in many ways, but he knew what he was capable of, and he didn't want some soft life. He's safe at home, in an office, sending emails. On the contrary, he knew what it was to be human and alive, and he knew it was about pitting himself against all comers and pushing on and not complaining and enduring, and as a product of that, achieving. They had a sense beyond the material. They knew that life wasn't about being, you know, in your bedroom in your Paddington Bear pyjamas playing Warcraft and getting a Domino's pizza delivered by Deliveroo. You know, they were out in the world being human and alive, and the technocrats know nothing of men like that. They will never be men like that. That's why they have their fantasies of transhumanism, merging human and technology. It's come about because they cannot begin, that elite, that narrow, shallow elite that's got all the money. And who cares about money? They've got all the trillions, you know, they've got all the gear and no idea. Their obsession with transhumanism has come about because they don't understand what human is, and they don't understand what human is for. And as a consequence of that, they don't just fail to value human beings, they despise them. And that will be their undoing. We think that's the threat, but that in truth is their Achilles heel, because their ideology is an inversion of nature. What, it's upside down and back to front and wrong. Wrong in the natural law sense of right and wrong. They are running counter to nature, and nature has been running the show for 14 billion years. So what they are trying to do with their inversion and their subversion and their suppression and their oppression and their censorship and the rest of it is like holding a ball underwater or smothering grass beneath concrete. It only lasts as long as they've got the energy for it, and their energy will run out. And they are in defiance, not just of nature, but of the natural order of things. Their worldview is an inversion of all that's natural, and for that reason, they are doomed to fail, and we will win.
Okay. Will we win? Well, I see it a little differently. I see that individuals will be able to make the changes because they've had the courage to function at the spiritual level and say, I don't need more stuff to find happiness. I don't need a perfect relationship to find happiness. I don't need to be told what my mission should be and be obedient doing it. I don't need anyone else's propaganda to become my reality. I do not need to be told by corrupt politicians, sociopaths, and very, very intellectually diminished individuals of what the purpose of my life should be. I don't want to be programmed. I'm not going to volunteer for anything that they have in mind, because these are people that have never acknowledged they're wrong about anything. But maybe I'm wrong. Show me when we as a society acknowledged we were wrong about Vietnam, about over 70 regime changes, about all the assassinations, about our killer agencies like the CIA that have virtually run amok. There's no oversight whatsoever. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe with a House Oversight Committee and a Senate Intelligence Oversight Committee, with two separate groups, supposedly with bipartisan support, they would find what was wrong. They have never found anything wrong once. And when they did find something, they said because of their signing a non-disclosure act, they couldn't tell us. Just like the FDA knew that tobacco, based upon its patent and proprietary information, was addictive, they kept that from the American public. And as a result, millions upon millions of Americans died because they were addicted to the nicotine. And they didn't see that their first mission should be to protect the public. This is the Food and Drug Administration, one of the most corrupt organizations. It's insane that we should even use it as a benchmark for anything legitimate, because there's no legitimacy in any of these agencies. So where exactly are we supposed to see the light. Who's opening the doors? Only those people who say, I don't want to read the New York Times or Washington Post. I don't want to be propagandized by people who have their own agenda and are not going to say they're sorry for anything, nor make others who were responsible as policymakers apologize for what they've done. But we do want amnesty. We want, and the pharmaceutical industry was given amnesty back in 1986 by Ronald Reagan so that it could never be sued. It could, if every vaccine they created killed you, you couldn't sue anyone. But who cares? Who owns the patents and who owns the controlling stock in every pharmaceutical industry? It's not who you think. You have to look at BlackRock and Vanguard and these other entities because they control the stock. Hence, they control the board. So it doesn't matter whether you buy Pepsi or Coke. They own both. It doesn't matter whether you watch CNN or NBC. They own both. It doesn't matter whether you read the New York Times or some other publication. They own them. They control them. And then they controlled the journalist. And the journalist who didn't want to be controlled no longer had a place at the table. So you've got to decide you have the courage at this point in your life to at least start to deconstruct what you shouldn't be doing, not just with your diet, but everything. And if you do, then realize that there's no certainties for the future. You have to have the courage of character to say, I'm getting off this grid. Look, I'm not on Facebook. Yet the last time I was on Facebook, I had nearly 8 million people on a daily basis coming there. And I saw it was producing nothing constructive. So I left it. I left it. I'm not on Twitter. I'm not on LinkedIn. I'm on none of this. And my cell phone is an old-fashioned flip phone. And I carry it to the store with me in case there's an emergency back here. And that's it. You don't see me with a cell phone. You don't see me walking around like an idiot. You know, watching what's on my time is better spent. So when will you have the courage to get off the grid? Stop using their credit cards. Stop buying their crap. Stop celebrating holidays if they're commercial. And all holidays are commercial. Yeah, I like music for Christmas. I like hearing Bing Crosby and singing White Christmas. I love that. But I don't like it all being disguised as something that it's not. Everything is to exploit the average person or people with money. Even the rich are exploited, but they like being exploited because then they can keep the price tag on their airplane and their clothes and their fancy house. They should have a price. My house is worth $25 million and because their only relevance is how much they can buy, how much they can spend, and how much power they have to do it over again, where the average person can't give you a check for $400, yet on Black Friday was buying more crap they didn't need on a credit card they can't pay. They're going to be paying compounding interest. And we say that we have the courage to go out there and take on? No, maybe 5% do. 5% is not a small number of people, by the way. 5% of 331 to 32 million people is still a lot of people. But you have to organize. You have to decide what you want to do. And I don't see that happening. So what I do see happening is those who are wiser buying RVs, because then you've got your money in an asset that you control, not them. Because once the banks start using digital currency, watch how quickly everybody has someone controlling every purchase. And that purchase will be tied into your social credit scores. Are you a good citizen? Or do you listen to the wrong radio program, watch the wrong documentaries, read the wrong articles? That'll cost you. So it's time now to decide, because if you don't decide, then pick up seashells until the tsunami hits you, because it is coming. We've given you all the indicators, and look at what we've unveiled over the last 3 years. All of it has been accurate. My hope is that people wake up, just like the woman. I said to her, my last thought to her before I walked over my car was, it is better you stop listening to me if you don't intend to use any of the information. Better you stay in the life you are in and enjoy it as long as you can for whatever provides you. And that was it. I've seen too many people pretend that they're into something and they're not. They pretend it. They give themselves this guilt holiday. Well, yeah, I did this, and yeah, I did that, and I did that. I shouldn't have, but oh, I'm going to get back to being okay. Yeah, that doesn't happen very often. So let's just decide what kind of life we want to live, where we want to live. I believe that the intentional communities will be a very important part of the future. I really do. I see that as a big hope. I see people getting out of the metropolitan areas because otherwise you're going to have very rich areas where all the people living there are wealthy and they can afford everything that's provided. And you will have to have an identity card, a chip, to get into that whole area, a neighborhood. And you have large areas where rich will congregate. And everyone else? Well, you want to get a good example of this? There are a lot of documentaries on giving you a tour of India. Take the five largest cities and look how the wealthiest there live. Skyscrapers, and they have maids and servants. And look outside. Look out the window. As far as the eye can see, it's nothing but poverty. And within that poverty, there is also crime. You can't open the windows because of the pollution. But do they care enough from the skyscraper to help change that ghetto? And the answer is no. I never will forget when I was down in Rio one time. I was staying with a top doctor down there. And my brothers were with me. And we went up to the roof. And he said, I want to show you something. Now, this is in Ipanema Beach. And he said, take a look. What do you see? And we looked out over the ocean. And then at that point, I could see it. On the ground, you can't see it. And you could see raw sewage going right into the ocean. And I said, why in the world would you allow raw sewage? He's because the people in these buildings, which cost $2 million or more per apartment, and nobody wants to put the money up to, you know, to build sewage disposal. So as a result, none of us can go into the water. Hepatitis. He's in the hospital. We see hepatitis all the time from the water. There's that dichotomy. Beautiful ocean, wonderful people, great culture. But nobody wants to think of how can we do something that all of us benefit from. So the rich are rich and they got their apartments, but they can't use the water on the beach that they are so fond of, because they don't have the pollution standards. And this is the way it is. There are people crying out for help, and there are people who are demanding change. Until you decide that it's your life and you should start to live it, it's not your body, it's not your mind, it's theirs. Have a nice day, everyone.